You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 25 June. We've got US PCE data expected is 4.1%. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kian and Yana Prime XPT. Updates from Growthpoint and Nedbank. And if we have a minute, I want to get his view on gold because, man, things are looking bleak there. We're going to chat with Ethan Dube from Vinani on their result. Swinging back into profit, paying out most of the HEPS as a dividend. There's still a lot of divisions which are not profit-making. And then Elise Kruger, latest Pay Inc. data, shows real take-home pay has dropped to a two-year low. We are poorer. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Auditor General posts another miserable scorecard for municipalities. 76 municipal officers referred to for investigation. Business Day, private brands surge as retailers reshape competition for everyday goods. Growth strongest in the functional price-sensitive categories, flour, maize, rice and sugar. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.1%, NASDAQ off 0.4%. The East is mostly red. We've got Sydney down 0.6%, Tokyo 4% higher, Hong Kong down 1.5%, and Tencent down 0.7%. Commodities all red, gold futures 3,987, Brent 72.35, platinum 1,576 and palladium 1,177. The rand is 16.57. Bitcoin is 60,700. And top 40 opening call, red open, 340 points or 0.3% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Kia Nyonyana, Prime XBT. Kia, appreciate the early morning. Updates coming through. We had in the banking space, Standard Bank earlier in the week. Nedbank came in yesterday. I mean, no disrespect to the banks. I mean, a little bit boring. And I suppose that's kind of what we expect from our banks. We don't want them to be thrilling. So maybe boring's not a bad thing.
Yeah, a little bit boring, but I think there's quite a dichotomy between the really good performing banks and banks who are just the middle of the road. Yeah. And I think you speak of Standard Bank and you speak of Nedbank. They stand at two different polar opposites of why they're doing well and why the other one is struggling. And I think when you look at Nedbank's numbers, I mean, they're very benign and there's nothing that can fundamentally change the business but a rethink in how they do their banking, because I think the problem really lies in the fact that they have a legacy bank with high costs and that it really hampers their return on equity, where you see Standard Bank's return on equity upwards of 20%, Capitec up closer to 30%, and Nedbank in the mid-teens. And really, it is at the lower end of how the banks are performing in South Africa.
That's a great point. Looking at a simple price-to-book, which is my preferred for banks, we've got Standard Bank 1.9, Nedbank 1.1. I mean, that just tells the story.
And you look at those return on equity metrics and it tells you the story. I mean, at the lower end as well, you find also Absa, which is a bit in the doldrums as well. But then when you compare it to First Strand, Capitec, Standard Bank, they really rethought how they're going to look at their cost base and went for Hypertech, where Standard Bank went for the rest of Africa, and Capitec as well, looking at very low cost base, looking at a mass market model, and have 26 million clients. Versus Nedbank's client base, which is really trying to do a lot, but you're looking at the personal banking. It's where they're seeing the most strain.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's move to Growthpoint trading update. I mean, they're sitting slight discount to NAV, a dividend yield of around 7.5, neither shabby. They do mention vacancies at decade lows. Your thoughts? I mean, this is a giant REIT on our market.
It is a giant retail, but a giant a giant on our market, but I think it's also had really underperformed in comparison to its peers. And I think it's because of the structural weight of the office sector. I think post-COVID really hasn't been great for A-grade commercial office spaces, as people have not really returned back to the office. But I also think what has also drained this stock has been the particular focus on going offshore. They went offshore and borrowed in foreign currency, and when higher borrowing costs came, it affected their business. And now they're in a rapid restructure of this business, trying to sell off these office sector assets, which are weighing on the business. They've done well in the turnaround plan. And I think the operational metrics are seen to be peaking. As you said, vacancies drop from 8.2 to 7.3, and highest lease renewal success rate in a decade of about 79.1%.
Yeah, I take your point, and it is that offshore debt. A quick last question. Everyone's asking me. I don't know the answer, so I thought I'd ask you, what's up with gold? Or perhaps more correctly, what's down with gold? We've got the futures below 4,000. We did have that giant shake-off to the, 5,600 last week of Jan, and it's been under pressure.
Yeah, I think it's just how capital has moved. I think when real interest rate and bond yields push higher, the opportunity cost of holding gold is just too high. But I think what really has been really quite surprising for me is just the technical breakdown on the chart.
Yeah.
I mean, it decisively moved below its simple 50-day moving average. It also moved below its 200-day moving average. And at that time, I didn't see that resistance, but I saw that more of as a ceiling at 4,340, meaning that the price is going to remain below the 4,340. And I think when you look at also the big investment banks like Goldman Sachs, they've officially slashed their second half projections, dropped its Q3 forecast from about 4,850 down to 4,300, which still sits at that 200-day moving average. And I think there's quite a silver lining right now. While the near-term environment is very challenging, I think the price is just technically weak, and that's just on the back of a geopolitics as well as where a risk really lies for asset pricing.
Yeah, I mean, it was that 200-day, which was also support around, 4,480 or so when that broke. It's been fairly ugly since then. We'll leave it there. Kenyanyana, you find him, of course, Prime XBT Care. Appreciate the early morning time and our poll on LinkedIn today. Back to Growth Point, value and property. Have your say. Have your vote. LinkedIn. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Ethan Duby, he is CEO at Vinani. They had results here in February, so revenue up 17%. HEPS was 10.2 cents. That's from a 2.8 cent loss last year. Dividend, exactly 10 cents. Ethan, appreciate the time today. Let's start with local fund management. That's doing quite well. You had a merger here. How's merger gone? How's assets under management looking in the local fund management?
Hi, Simon. Thanks very much for this interview. Yeah, we did a merger between Vunani Fund Managers and Sentio last year.
Mm-hmm.
The merger has gone very, very well, I should say. What it's done is that it's given us more funds under management, and also it's brought additional skills that we require to basically grow our business and expand.
Gotcha. You also did, because it's been a busy year. It was almost a little over a year ago, May of last year, you finalized the sale 30% of Fairheads to Old Mutual Corporate Ventures. Fairheads, a very profitable business for yourself. Two questions, I suppose. Why sell it and how's it gone? Is this, again, perhaps more about expertise and knowledge coming from Old Mutual?
Fairheads is a very good business, very profitable, as you have indicated. We took a decision which was more of a strategic nature than anything else. So we looked at the relationship with Old Mutual as one that will help us grow the business and also capitalize on their wide network as a big corporate. I must say that since we did the deal, things have gone very, very well in terms of the tenders that we doing together with Old Mutual and some of the businesses that we're looking at together. We focus in that business on administration, pure administration, and we're good at it.
Yeah.
And basically, our view is that between ourselves and Old Mutual, we will capture all the administration business, and they will benefit from basically passing on the administration and focusing at what they're good at.
Gotcha. Okay, 100% there. Insurance, back to profit. There's impairment. There's some fair value swings there. As I understand, this is the Eswatini operation. Is this a commercial operation? Is this personal insurance? What is the business there?
This is the insurance that we bought from Momentum. So we took over all the Momentum businesses in Eswatini, which were trading under Metropolitan as well as Momentum. This business was primarily focusing on the life side of insurance. We've since expanded the business into the short-term insurance as well as the medical insurance. And I must say that, you know, those two businesses that we've basically added have also done very, very well. The insurance business, the short-term insurance, as you would see from the numbers, recorded a profit. The health business is still early days. We are in partnership with one of the large pension fund in that business. But I must say that we've seen quite good growth coming from the medical insurance as well. Yeah. So we're quite positive. We think that business is growing. We probably maybe number three or so in the market and growing.
Okay. And I take your point. A lot of those are sort of early stages in their cycle and moving into that profitability. You've still got some challenging parts of the business, institutional securities, stockbroking segment, still losing there. What sort of timelines are you looking at for return to profitability?
Simon, in terms of the institutional broking business, we saw quite a good turnaround in the year under review. Mm-hmm. That business would have recorded, as the numbers show, a profit this year, although it's not a big profit, but I think they recorded a profit. If I look at the numbers, that business has picked up, and it's largely because we've brought in research to it. We've brought in some capable people to help us run that business. And we've done JVs with some guys in the UK to allow us to trade across the ocean in that business. So I would say that currently we're very positive with that business. We did struggle on the mergers and acquisition, which is corporate finance. But the nature of that business is that if you don't have a big balance sheet where you actually offer advice as well as funding, would always struggle. But we do need that in the sense that it allows us to see deals and it allows us to conclude deals very quickly if we have in-house capabilities.
Gotcha. And I take your point on the balance sheet. A last question. This is to the year end February. Of course, subsequent to that, we've seen the war in Iran. We've seen heightened market volatility, energy prices. Have you seen a significant shift in the business since the year end, or have you largely continued what was a strong turnaround year for Vinani?
This year started off quite well, as you rightly say. Everything was looking good. We're in the interest rate cycle, which was declining until we had the war, as you rightly say, in Iran, Israel, and the US. And we've seen quite a lot of volatility during that period. So we're cautiously optimistic at this point in time, if I can put it that way. But the trading period for last year until we got into that war situation was looking very good for us. But if I look at where we are right now, I think that things are slowly stabilizing. So we're hoping that we would continue to have another good year going forward.
Yeah, I take your point. Things shifted quite markedly, although we are slowly getting back perhaps to that sort of normal. We'll leave it there. It's Ethan Dube, his CEO, Vinani. Always appreciate the time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Elise Kruger, independent economist, the Pay Inc. Net Salary Index. Data is out. This is for May 2026. Elise, appreciate the early morning time. I mean, what we see is a slight increase up to, 21,510 Rand for May. It's up 0.2 from April. It's up 0.9% year on year. Problem is, as soon as we bring inflation into the picture, South African consumers are going backwards. We are poorer this year than we were a year ago.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, indeed. Now, in real terms, we've seen a drop of 2.8% in the month of May. And also for the first 5 months of the year, it's a drop of 1.7% already. So it's definitely eating into the purchasing power of salary earners. And, you know, that is on top of other challenges like higher inflation generally, and also the fact that we had an interest rate increase. So there are lots of challenges still out there for the salary earner.
And to throw into the mix is the fuel price increase. I mean, it is tough, but maybe there's a bit of a glimmer. And let's get to that part, because as the fuel price is coming down, that helps. The point is we're just not getting the increases. It you know, there's two parts to the consumer sort of wallet, and we might get some relief from the fuel, but we're not getting that relief in terms of income.
Yes, indeed. So in the short term, I think we can get some good news at the pumps. I mean, looking at the 1st of July adjustment, hopefully petrol down by about between 2 rand 50 and 3 rand, and diesel almost 4 rand per litre. And if I look at this morning's oil price, you know, around 72, yeah. I think we are in for definitely another cut in fuel prices in August. So some reversal, some U-turn from the pressures that we have seen in on the fuel side. But unfortunately, you know, inflation has already moved in terms of levels. Mm-hmm. So even though we might see these declines in sort of July, August, inflation could come down towards 4% in that quarter. There is unfortunately a low base of calculation that will push headline inflation back towards about 4.7 in the fourth quarter. So average wise, it's going to be unlikely that salary earners are going to have increases above inflation in 2026.
Yeah, and we of course already got the first rate hike. And I imagine, I mean, as a consumer, that there's certain things that we sort of can't avoid. Utility, transport, these are areas where we need to be spending. But I'm imagining it's our sort of discretionaries. I'm thinking restaurants, I'm thinking food, maybe beverages, which is going to be particularly hard hit because those are the discretionary side of the wallet spend.
Yes, indeed. You know, we've already seen signs of that in the first quarter's data, GDP data, and, you know, the household spending composition showed that, you know, spending was mostly on essentials and the discretionary spending came down quite a bit. That was even before we had the full impact of the Middle East unfolded in the economy. So I think we're going to see more of that, you know, sort of luxury spending still under pressure in the second half of the year and more of a focus on the essential spending.
You make a great point there. I mean, The war in Iran has certainly exacerbated circumstances, particularly around fuel. But my sense is that it was tough coming in. You mentioned up top that, you know, this has been a tough first 5 months for 2026. The war's made it worse. This isn't the only problem. It's been tough out there before that even started.
Yes, indeed. You know, in a way, I would say surprisingly and slightly disappointingly so, because we did start the year out with quite an optimistic economic view. You know, and the economic view has been sliced as a result of what happened in the Middle East and the impact on the South African economy. But even though that has been the case, you know, quarter one, for instance, has already been a disappointing outcome, both on salaries and on household spending. So I think we've had two good years, and it almost seems like this year is a bit of a stabilization year in terms of salaries.
Yeah, okay. I take a point. We have had a couple of good years and maybe we are stabilizing. We would like to be richer, but that's not always a straight line. We'll leave it there. Celise Kruger, she's independent analyst, the Paying Net Salary Index for May 2026. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Chantal Marks yesterday. We were talking junior miners, but most particularly we're talking ASP Isotopes. They've signed a contract to sell about 15% of their Phase 1 helium supply from their Virginia Renergen site in the Free State. We asked you if this makes the company worth a look. Around 40% each said yes, great assets. The other 40-odd said no, long way to go. The rest of you said, you know what, thanks, but no junior miners for you. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobukle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome comment in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. The cost of delay.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.